Hey everybody, welcome to the Blister Podcast. I'm Jonathan Ellsworth, the founder of Blister, and you can check us out online at blisterreview.com. And you might be thinking to yourself, wait, is that new intro music? Yep, this is a shout out to our bike editor, Noah Bodman, who last week on the podcast called Fuzz his favorite band. So here you go, Noah. The song's called What's in My Head. Anyway, this week we're talking to a living legend, Xavier de la Rue. Xavier is a three-time world freeride champion, a four-time border cross world champion, and he has pushed the boundaries of big mountain snowboarding so far that it is basically impossible to overstate his significance and influence, or his total badassery. Among other things, Xavier and I talk about some of his current and former film projects, the current state of the snowboarding industry, his philosophy of life and risk-taking, why he has a thing for riding down ice falls, and what's next for him. This episode of the Blister Podcast is brought to you by Nest Bedding. Nest Bedding is a comfortable and affordable alternative to overpriced mattress stores, but not only does Nest sell mattresses, they've got a great selection of pillows, sheets, comforters, pet beds, and more. So in addition to upgrading your mattress, go to nestbedding.com to see if it might be time to refresh the other stuff on your bed, too. Because anything that helps you sleep better at night is a product that will make you feel better every single day. Now let's get to our conversation with snowboard legend Xavier de la Rue. Where are you currently?
So right now I'm in Biarritz, well, close to Biarritz in the southwest of France. So it's quite close to where I grew up, but it's on at the beach because I love surfing.
and you were telling me that you will spend 5 or 6 months of the year here. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like generally, yeah, maybe 6-7 months up in the mountains in Switzerland, and then the rest of the time at the beach. Yeah, that's new since a few years, basically. Yeah, but I find it a really good balance of, you know, like kind of cutting from the mountains and seeing sunsets and sunsets and yeah, smelling the ocean. I love it. Yeah.
When did which came first? I think I know the answer here, but which came first, snowboarding or surfing?
Snowboarding came first. Yeah. I'm a pretty terrible surfer. I've been surfing since 20 years, but it's just appears to be very slow to sink in. Yeah,
it turns out it's hard, huh?
Yeah, it's hard.
There's no bindings to click into.
Yeah, exactly. And we've all got that kind of like heavy snowboarder style. And it's not the point of being Kelly Slater. the point is just that I love it, and that's good enough for me to just go every day and feel great and have my few waves and be happy.
Yeah. So you spend half the year climbing up super steep mountains, and then the other half of the year falling off your surfboard. Is surfing a kind of staple of your off-season workout, or do you have something like a fitness program before you to get yourself ready to start walking up those big lines and then riding down those big lines too?
No, I think I've always hated training programs, and they've always been really bad to me. Even when I used to compete a lot, like every time I've been trying to train, it's been always like really bad, and I've always ended up doing badly because I was not happy. I've always liked doing sports, you know, that I loved and that gave me pleasure and emotion, and surfing does that. So it for sure keeps me in shape, although it's definitely not what I should be doing to be in shape to climb mountains. But but I think it's still a nice way to give to all the shocks you get in your legs during the winter. And like, yeah, you know, kind of straightens you up and makes you happy. And then here and there I go running, or I go in the mountains, climb something for a few days sometimes. But I definitely have no program and I hate it. Yeah.
Of the films of yours I've seen, White Noise really, really stands out for me. And I actually don't know if that's true for a lot of people or if that makes me weird or something, but is it weird if I ask you some questions about some of your opening statements in White Noise?
Yeah, no, for sure.
Okay.
It's funny you mentioned that because, yeah, it's like not so common that people choose that one film as a standing one.
Is that
the one that stands out? Yeah, that's cool. I appreciate that. Yeah.
I think that, I mean, the writing, you can see a lot of your films and see some pretty remarkable writing, but these lines of yours in that movie, "My snowboarding is a battle, a constant test for life. Things that come too easily are simply not interesting to me." I mean, this is starting to lay out kind of a philosophy of life here, and in a very poetic way. And I just, this kind of jumped at me, and I thought, you know, what I didn't want to do is if you were like, man, that was several years ago, and I don't know, you know, that was then and this is now. But I was like, I want, if it was okay with you, I kind of wanted to go down a few of those sentences because I thought it was such a crystallized kind of powerful statement about some of these things. You know, I think a lot of times is that getting a little too?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, I appreciate. No, it might just not be completely accurate. Well, I mean, at that stage, I was pushing snowboarding, I think.
Yep.
A bit further than I am doing it now. I was taking definitely more risks.
Yep.
And it was definitely the time when it was starting to cost me a lot to, you know, like to do season after season, you know, at that level of risk.
Yep.
And and at that time I was truly having that battle I was talking about in my head because yeah, I loved it. I wanted to keep pushing, but then I had the obvious truth that, you can keep going. You've got the level to make things more impressive, bigger, stronger. But, the thing that is going to stop you is the death.
Yep.
It's so present in the mountains and you know, it's touched me really close a few times. And it's hard, you know, it's hard to keep, you know, being able to fight against it for, you know, year after year. So, I think that was a bit of a turning point, that movie for sure. After that, I started to go a bit more into documentary style. I kind of started to change my focus from trying to push the sports to maybe more living experiences. And kind of living snowboarding in a different way and showing that and trying to inspire people through that rather than through craziness and huge action.
Yep. Yeah, and at a certain point, right? I mean, and I, the follow-up questions I wanted to ask you about those statements in White Noise is, you know, people aren't static, right? Of course, our ideas and our activities change over the course of a lifetime. We're not interested in the exact same things when, you know, today as we are when we were 5-year-old children. And so those, when you have these very clear kind of statements of a life philosophy, that was a big thing that I wanted to ask you about, and you've answered that already pretty well, I think. But those, you know, you talked about wanting to show a different sort of side of snowboarding, but to what extent was it simply saying, like, I'm sort of over this particular level of risk? right? Like, I'm not trying to die in the mountains. That's not an objective of mine, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of trying to step out a bit from what I was doing, from my little bubble, mm-hmm. and being like, okay, listen, enough, stop playing, because it's going to cost you the ultimate price. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe it's time to open up, look things from further away, and maybe discover new faces of it. And I think it did, you know, I totally found new ways to do my sports, and it kind of rejuvenated in a way my passion in some ways. And at the same time, I kind of cut the risk down a lot and still made very nice projects and very nice adventures. And I've been, actually, it's been really an important point for me that, you know, I've always needed to feel some kind of progression in a way. So progression was before White Noise and until White Noise, like a purely technical progression, but then it became kind of a more human progression where I learned so many things, you know, like sailing to Antarctica and discovering these countries, and like go for huge campings in really cold places and things like this. And every time I've been learning new aspects of life through snowboarding and through those trips, and that was what I was looking for.
I just think that's got to be, to any thinking person who would say to himself or herself, I don't want this to simply end where I've just had to take bigger risks every single time out. That's the only way to, you know, this the need to one up. It's like, well, then you pivot, right? And you do start looking into. So I don't know. Maybe you can say more about if that in fact resonates with how you've been thinking about these things over the last several years.
I think it's a fact of getting maybe older and wiser, maybe. And I think that naturally, when you're young, you're looking for the, you know, the most obvious challenge in a way. And as a snowboarder, for sure, is like to just go bigger than everyone else and bolder and all of that. And I guess I had done that for quite a while. And then I guess, you know, like what I say in things that come too easily are not interesting to me is that, you know, I'm always really interested in challenges. And what I've been trying to do since then is to find new challenges and that are different, and where the challenge doesn't necessarily lies into the consequence of dying, or that's a bit secondary, and I've really enjoyed that.
Yeah,
because that was now I think almost 5 years ago. White Noise.
Is that right? I was going to ask you about that. I for some reason I thought
4 years. I think
Yeah, because I thought that I had seen a date of 2013, but of course that may have been a published date, which is different from when you actually wrote those lines, or when the filming, the bulk of the filming was actually taking place.
No, I think it was 2012. Huh?
Okay.
I'm quite sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So since the next, this is a good segue into the conversation of risk that I wanted to ask you about. Do you then, I mean, talking about there's been a bit of a shift in your thinking. Do you look at the younger version of yourself and think that was stupid? Or do you look at the younger version of yourself and think this is, you know, do you know what I mean? Like when you were talking about going bigger than everyone else.
No. I think I was really, thinking a lot, and when I look back, I don't see that as a stupid at all. I see that as a, you know, I had the skills to push things further, and you know, it was my goal, my dream. It was what made me, you know, be happy, and I believed in it. And I'm, you know, I think I wish I could, you know, keep going and have the energy to being able to be like, yeah, I just want to go for it and do that. But then Yeah, it's just I think I'm just thinking more, and I've kind of proven to myself what I needed to do. I think I've kind of ticked that box a little bit. So yeah, now I've learned to appreciate all of that snowboarding differently. But yeah, definitely not no regret, and yeah, I'm kind of proud. I know I kind of you know, went really close sometimes, and I got really lucky sometimes. I could have died. Yeah. And yeah, but I think that's the way my personality has always been. I've always liked kind of daring life a bit and daring things, and I've been always quite enthusiastic about going into challenges and getting out of them, and I think I keep doing a bit the same, but yeah, in a bit more reasonable way.
Yeah, no. you're not exactly just skiing groomers these days.
No.
Was there a signature moment or two for you where you thought, okay, that was such a close call that there was that moment? Or was it more the kind of accumulation of your experience and you thought, boy, it's just been maybe one too many times. I've rolled the dice a lot. Talk to me about that.
I think it's a bit more of a step by step things. You know, I would say more and more mature, and still nowadays, you know, it's like some days where I'm really inspired to go wild, and then some days where I'm a bit more at the top, where I'm like, why the hell would I do that? and it's funny because I still end up doing some really gnarly stuff, but I think now the fact of being a bit more picky. It's not really that I will do less gnarly, but it's just that I will do it less frequently with a bit more like, you know, fire of the youth kind of style. And I think that at the end, it takes the risk down. And so, yeah, I think it's a long-term thing.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that it has shifted completely, that I'm a different person. I'm just the same, but a bit wiser, yep. I think.
Let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, right? I think those of us who spend a lot of time in the mountains, we've all had, or many of us have had an experience, maybe like one experience or two experiences or five experiences where you think on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm hitting a kind of 9 or 10 in terms of how scared, how terrified I am. I think your 10... Well, I mean, I think for a lot of us, I mean, if we've ever been in a situation where it's like, if I don't self-arrest, I'm heading over a cliff and this will be the end, right? Some of us maybe have had an experience or one or two experiences like that. How many 9s or 10s would you say that you've experienced? You know what I mean?
I don't know, maybe like this, I was like, while you were speaking, I was trying to kind of slightly count in my head.
Yeah.
And I would say about like maybe 5 times-ish.
Yeah.
Sort of. And yeah, then, 5, 6, 7 times. Yeah.
Okay. So Xavier is saying he's had 5, 6, 7, but I bet you hit 8 or 9 a hell of a lot more frequently than I do. And that seems like a remarkable thing. Or is it just you're saying, no. Many of the lines that you're seeing me riding, even if they look very exposed, even, you know, if when you're skiing your signature, you know, ice falls, which you seem to love to do, for you, those are not approaching, they might look pretty gnarly to someone else, but for you, you're like, that's still in kind of the 3 to 4 to 5 range?
Yeah, I think it has nothing to do with how steep, how gnarly is your run. But when you hit those 9 or 10, it's just when things are not what they were expected. That's when you get tricked.
Yeah.
And it can be in something really easy sometimes where you're like, whoa, oh my God. And suddenly you've got either a slab or a piece of, could be just a piece of ice under, or just a few boulders of ice under the pow, you know, where that you haven't seen, and you're just coming full speed, or It could be like, yeah, on a little hike suddenly, or just on icy grounds, and then suddenly you realize that if you do any wrong move, you're gonna be down. So yeah, it's, but usually whenever I drop into something crazy, you know, if I haven't made any mistake assessing the conditions, then it's kind of everything goes very easily.
Do you have, along those lines, let's talk about a situation where everything went as well as you had hoped, as you're standing on top of a line. Is there a specific line, or whether it's in a film segment or not, was there a specific moment you can think of where you're like, okay, if this all breaks perfect, that's great, but I'm still pretty nervous about dropping into this?
Well, I think it's every single line I'm doing.
See, I thought you were going to say that.
Pretty much. That's, yeah.
Every single line. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, everything in line. Actually, it's my way to approach things. It's just, you know, it's always like trying to imagine everything that can go wrong. And yeah, because if you don't do that, you're going to get screwed, I think. So it's the only way to do it. And there is always something that can go wrong. Always, always, always. To be honest, I have the feeling that 90% of the lines I'm doing, and that also most of people do, and it's not necessarily going super crazy, there's always something that can go wrong here or there. And you always need to have an escape plan. And if you don't, then you should just not go, I think.
This is to say, if I go have, say, my last 30 days in the mountains versus your last 30 days in the mountains, your last 30 yep. times out, it sounds like you're riding scared because of the positions you're putting yourself in. No? You just got done saying that every time you're dropping into a line, there's a, is it fair to use the word nervousness? Because
yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, yeah, scared it might be a bit strong, but yeah, it's always quite intense, I yep. think. Any serious line, you have to be a bit tensed and nervous. And to me, it's like ever since I got into this huge avalanche, I made a pact with myself that I would force myself to be scared all the time. Mm-hmm. And because it's just too easy to be just having the best time at the top and just not worry about anything. But if you do that, you're just not focused, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that by being scared, you know, it makes you a bit paranoid. It makes you kind of analyze anything that happens, and it makes you, you know, being able to react to anything that goes wrong, because things go wrong so quickly in the mountains.
Yeah. Can you say a bit about that experience? You said the avalanche. Is that to say that you've been caught once? And only once?
Yeah, I've been caught only once, yeah. Well, I've been taken in sloughs over cliffs and things like this, but a real avalanche, a massive one, only once. And that was a very, very, very big one. It was, you know, it took me down like over a mile and a half down the mountain and like 3,000 feet of altitude. Into a gully and basically the whole mountain ripped down and it's like it was a pretty much a miracle that I kind of made it through.
When was this?
That was in 2008.
Hmm. Yep. So yeah, since 2008, everything you're saying makes a lot more sense in that context. You don't go stand on top of any line and just assume everything's going to go swimmingly.
Yeah, because, well, I think I've always been fairly careful, like pretty careful. And yeah, like that avalanche was a typical accident. It was like, you know, we had done pretty steep and gnarly lines. And then that one line was a bit like later in the day. It was an easy one, so we didn't really take it seriously. And I went to the top without really scoping everything. And things started to go wrong in it. And then, like it very often does in the mountains, when one thing goes wrong, and then it kind of brings everything else and can end up into a huge shit show, and that's what happened, where it was like just a small slab, and that transformed into the whole mountain going down. Yeah, so if you want, like, the conditions were not that dangerous, but I kind of released a small slab, which basically was able to put enough pressure on the rest of the snowpack to make something completely crazy. But I would never have triggered it by myself, just a little one. The big one, yeah. But most of all, the point was that I was definitely not as focused as I was for the like normal, like steeper, more advanced lines in a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
More serious lines.
What's your demeanor like as you are, you know, things start getting tense and intense? Do you start getting intense and really locked in, or do you take more of the lighthearted approach? Let's crack some jokes. How do you handle those situations?
I think that it depends. Sometimes I'm kind of serious, but I think I really like. I think that sometimes I like to kind of be serious. I'm usually globally serious, but I definitely like to take some jokes to de-dramatize. But it's always kind of, yeah, jokes about the situation that we put ourselves in or stuff like that. But at the same time, I'm still in my thing. You know, I don't just switch off, because to me that's the thing really of you know, like being really focused or like, I think you can be lighthearted and joke around, but you still have your mind in the problem. But you could also do the other way around and just be like thinking about, like, yeah, your girlfriend, or about your party last night, and just about what you're gonna eat tonight, and then and then that's like, usually there's a moment where you need to kind of forget all these things of life.
Who's the funniest person you go into the mountains with?
I don't know. I go a lot with Sam and Tamatan, you know, the skier, and it's funny, like, yeah, he's really, really funny, and it's even more funny because he's a stereotype of a Swiss guide, you know. Well, no, he's a Swiss guide from Zermatt, and, you know, like, they're very known for being like uber serious, uber conservative, and like, he's just a little pervert on on legs, and like always cracking pervert jokes all the time, and that's always great. Huh. Yeah, I kind of like it because, you know, it's like, yeah, it's a nice contrast with the seriousness of what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Who were your heroes growing up as a kid and getting into these things? Who were you looking up to, or, you know, drawing inspiration from? Because it correct me if I'm wrong. Well, I won't ask you to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it just feels like what you were doing was rather unprecedented. So I couldn't think, oh, well, clearly Xavier was watching this person and that person.
Yeah. Well, I think I've always had this argument with my younger brother, because it's always been, why don't you watch all the videos around of everybody else? And I was always kind of doing my own thing, and I was always being like, well, it's nice to watch other people, but I like to kind of see things my way. And yeah, he was always like, you're the old guy, kind of, you know, because he's quite a bit younger than me. Mm-hmm. But I would say that, yeah, when I was really growing up, like when I was a teenager, I looked up a lot to Terry Hackinson, I think, for his style of riding. Like, you know, you could see how much fun he was having on his board, and about the fact, mostly about the fact that he was kind of shaping his snowboarding, you know, the way he wanted it. He was not trying to copy anyone else or be someone else that he wasn't. like he was like really you know, bringing something and just living to his own inspiration. And I think that I've been trying to I think I've been inspired by that for sure. And then later on I've been inspired by Jeremy Jones, I think. I must say, because he was like the snowboarder pushing things into the big mountains. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I always am a bit unclear on the timing of when you were really starting to do your stuff and when Jones was starting to do his stuff. So sounds like he was already. I mean, not that anybody cares about who did what first or something like that per se, but he was the guy that you could say, all right, yep, that's the kind of riding and I want to do and where I want to do it. Jones would be that next obvious person.
Yeah, he was definitely, like, if I think of one person, he would be that guy for sure.
Yeah.
And then I think I inspired myself a lot from skiers that were actually riding a lot faster, jumping a lot bigger, that had also a more mountaineering kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. And I think that, it inspired me a lot. And, you know, it was a bit of a, you know, it came also from the fact that in Europe, we had a bit, like, snowboarding was not as strong as in the US. And, like, the skiing culture was, like, you know, had a pretty high level in the mountains. It always has had, especially in Chamonix.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, at some stage, I kind of gave up the whole, you're a skier, I'm a snowboarder, we shouldn't talk. And like, I've been very quickly spending most of my time with skiers because they were the ones charging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And talk to me about how old were you? Did you start snowboarding first? Did you actually start out on skis and sort of do both for a while?
I started on skis like any kid from a resort. And there was no snowboarding because I live, I grew up in the Pyrenees, which is a very small mountain, a kind of secondary mountain in France where everything arrives like 10 years after everywhere else. So we're like the poor people down there. And I kind of, discovered snowboarding around, in 92. Yeah, I was like 12, 13 years old. And it was kind of a very, very new way and much more open-minded to see the mountain. And it kind of opened up the whole, you know, every single thing that you could be doing up in the mountains. And that was, a big eye-opener for me, for sure.
And so you started snowboarding at about 12. And I know you've got, so you started riding and then fairly quickly moved into border cross.
Yeah. We, back in the days, we were doing a bit of everything. We used to do gates, freestyle, powder. And then when border cross came in, I kind of liked, I was kind of, very all-round rider, and it kind of fitted a lot also my personality of going and like kind of charging through a course like this. Mm-hmm. And I think border cross has been an amazing sport, and it's taught me like so much, and I've had such amazing years, and I think it's a very big disappointment to seeing the sports to where it is today. Because I think it could have been, it could be the most amazing sport if the riders had, taken it the way it should have been taken. Yeah. If it didn't get swallowed by the Olympics, basically. Yeah.
Say more about that. If it didn't get swallowed by the Olympics, what would your ideal trajectory have been, or what would it be like today?
Well, basically, it started out pretty, really cool. Like in the times of Sean Palmer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It used to be people with big personalities that love snowboarding, that used to really embrace the lifestyle of snowboarding, that wanted to go big and crazy. And, the sports was just like progressing, and it was fun. It was nuts and it was crazy. It had really good values. And then ever since he got into the Olympics, it became just so strict and regimented, and it was like it became all run by federations, which would bring up young riders with no snowboarding culture. Yep. And and basically the sport lost its soul like more and more. And it's a shame because nowadays when I see all these kind of huge skateboard courses that are getting shaped, it's like all the huge structures in skateboarding, like, or even big skate parks, like that's what Bordercross used to be somehow, like just like getting features, crazy features one after the other with a great flow, and it could be really popular and really fun.
So what are the odds that, how come we can't, do you know Darren Rolves, right? Darren Rolves has his Banzai tour. Why can't we get Xavier's, new border cross tour?
To be honest, it's crossed my mind a few times, like kind of trying to, put, one event where it would be, what it should be in a way.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe it will come out one day. Maybe I just need to find the perfect location with the perfect timing. And until now, I've been quite busy with everything I do, and I am still quite busy with all the thing I still need to do, and I still want to do. But it might come, I think. And because there's definitely is a potential to show that side of snowboarding. And I think, to come back to Big Mountain and the rest, all those years of border cross have been great to learn, to learn how to really stay on my feet. And that allowed me to kind of feel really confident on my feet. And when everybody has always been saying, oh, you're going so fast, you're crazy. Going fast has always been really, really easy because after... kind of going way too fast on two like crazy kickers that are, that you're going to overshoot and you've got six people around you and everything, then riding a line with Pau, and a few jumps becomes really easy in a way, apart for the whole like avalanche and like kind of mountain risk situation. Yeah.
That's interesting. And I know, Justin Bob, that's one of the things that he was really wanting me. He's like, you've got to talk to him about why he rides so fast in the mountains. And I don't remember what video or film it was in, but I seem to recall you talking about the kind of the safety component of that, right? And this kind of attitude, please correct me if I'm wrong, but it's just like, hey man, you're an exposed situations, and who knows how stable or unstable the snowpack is, get up and get down, right?
But that's the thing. For many aspects, if you're fast, first of all, you're not going to sink into the snow, so you're not necessarily going to go and touch all those sharks that are waiting for you in the bad spot. Second of all, if anything breaks, you've got momentum to kind of escape really quickly and with the momentum that's needed to do that. And then also for jumps, like jumps become kind of a lot easier when you have a bit of speed.
Yeah.
Because, like the transition becomes like a lot smoother and better. And I think that the whole point is how comfortable are you to ride fast? And to me, it's always been something that has been part of my DNA and also of my background, with all that border cross.
It makes sense.
And also I really love the feeling. To me, snowboarding, like riding a line, to me is like getting to that stage where I kind of open my arms and I feel the air on my body, and I always kind of describe that, that moment you know, where it's like kind of a turning point where I enter into a video game where I just can aim whatever I want and do whatever I want. That's the way I feel when I go fast in a way. And I love it. Yeah.
I want to ask, we talked a bit about this, your unhappiness with the state of border cross these days, but can I get you to talk a little bit about sort of the state of snowboarding more broadly? Kind of what are you seeing, or how are you, you know, what are you seeing out there? And obviously there's a lot of different segments, right? And so there's big mountain riding, split boarding has gotten bigger and bigger. There's still kind of parks and half pipes and competitions. I don't know if there was a, if you were had to give a kind of state of the union, what would you have to say? What are you thinking or seeing out there?
Well, I think that compared to 10 years ago, I think that I'm very happy the way snowboarding has evolved. Huh. And I think that, you know, I used to be back then a bit frustrated at seeing how people were just focusing literally everything on tricks and like park tricks and jibbing. And I was like, come on, like snowboarding is a sport of powder, yeah, like mainly. And like, how come, you know, the roots of the sport don't have a bigger space into the sport? And I didn't expect such a radical change, but it definitely came in the last, yeah, in the last 10 years with the whole splitboard movement, with everybody going out there and like kind of experiencing what's out there, what's beyond just the little parks and things. And I really, really respect and I really enjoy riding a park. And I think it's a total part of snowboarding, and what the kids do now is completely mental.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really impressed, and I love watching it. And I think that to me, snowboarding has got a, like, it's true to itself. It's got plenty of sides to it. And yeah, I think that maybe one of my regrets is that maybe today, like for a young rider, it's if they want to be strong, it's really difficult to being able to do a bit of everything like we used to, because, you know, the level is so high, so you get to enter into a psycho high athlete like training mode where you just have your program and everything, and I think that's a bit of a shame. So yeah, if I was like, yeah, being a father or whatever, or an advisor, to me, I would not dream of going into like that kind of line of competition and things like this. But I think that there is, to me, like the part that is evolving quite well is the whole backcountry, freestyle, free ride, you know, the two elements joined together. And I think I'm quite happy to see a progression there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm watching my younger brother is doing quite well at that at the moment. And I have really, really high hopes on him, because yeah, he's really impressive at the minute. And he's just at the beginning, I think. Yeah, he made me feel old at the end of the season we rode together. And yeah, he's got that, wow, really good energy, really good touch, like, and the skills of like doing tricks everywhere, really.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. Yeah.
It's funny that we've had now conversations with Garrett Altman, who has been skiing on the FWT tour. He's a reviewer, a Blister reviewer. He was kind of bemoaning the specialization, the kind of earlier and earlier specialization, you know, and Darren Rolves was on the podcast and he was talking about and kind of bemoaning the specialization. And it sounds like you're saying the same thing. It's, we're hitting a kind of chorus and refrain here of, I don't know. I mean, like you did say though, I mean, people are so accomplished in their particular disciplines that I guess it makes it difficult to pitch for to keep it generalized, right? To ride some park, to get into the mountains, to ride border cross. But it sounds like all of you are saying, there's some regret being expressed about the earlier and earlier specialization. Is that fair enough to say?
Yeah, for sure. And like, I think because a super specialization kind of takes you away as well from the lifestyle of it, like, which is so important. I think the lifestyle of snowboarding is, you know, very much linked to partying, to enjoying nature, to enjoying so many things. And once you want to become a machine, like, yeah, because nowadays people are machines, then you need to be acting like one a bit. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but maybe that's just because we're lucky enough to experience that, and like, I'm sure that people could find their happiness doing that. But everyone has got his own tastes, I guess.
By the way, here's a random question for you: are you much of a reader, or movie watcher, or music listener, or musician? Are any of those?
No, I read. Yeah, I read quite a lot. Yeah, what no you... music. No, I'm terrible with music. Yeah. I read. Well, I read like kind of novels. Like right now, I'm reading a really cool comics that kind of like retraces the whole world economy, like to kind of explain it to understand it. In a comic way, but in a really smart way, and I'm having a blast. Yeah. I like to kind of read about many different things. It's called Economics, with an X at the end. I don't know if it's in French, but it's translated from the English, so I guess it would be the same title.
Okay.
But it's amazing. If you want, I could probably look up the English title and give you the name of the author, because it's, wow, it's brilliant.
No, check it out for sure.
Makes you understand what's happening at the moment a lot better. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll check it out for sure. On the film side, given that you're doing more, and well, I guess we can segue into this, but, with your DIY projects, and I'd love to have you talk a little bit about your shift from the films that you had been making some years ago to your work with the DIY project. Do you find yourself watching more snow sports films now and kind of studying and looking to see how things have been done? Do you spend so much time making these films that you know, if you're watching a movie, the last thing you want to do is watch a movie about mountains and snow? What's your relationship to film?
Yeah, I think you said it. I should probably watch a bit more what people do and things and analyze, but I've always been quite lazy on that. And not a huge fan of watching ski or snowboarding movies for some reason. It's funny because I don't know, maybe because it puts me into like kind of comparing what I do with them and like being jealous at some stuff they do. I don't know, maybe it's that, or maybe it's just because it puts me into kind of a work mode in some ways. Yeah, because like it's weird because like I kind of love the whole filming part because it makes you push things a bit further. But it's kind of also the part that's kind of work where you need to deliver something and where you need to kind of take some risk also for it sometimes. And sometimes I hate the fact of filming. But I guess it's like everything in life. You need to find a balance. And I've been sometimes a bit overdoing the whole filming. Yeah. But no, I'm a bit more like believing in luck and like kind of throwing myself in to a project and just going accepting to the mistake and not being perfect, but just going with the heart and just going wild.
We had when we spoke the other day before we were cut off, you were talking a bit about your movement from making, I guess one might say, like slightly more traditional snowboard films to what you've been doing with the DIY project. Can you talk about that again? That shift and what that represents and why that has become interesting to you?
Yeah, it actually links pretty well with what I said before, because yeah, I had the feeling after several years, like maybe 8 years of just traveling, doing movies with big crews, that I was getting less and less true to my real, you know, like to myself in terms of snowboarding, you know, with the fact that I was like, I had no time to write for myself, and that I was kind of always showing what I was doing through someone else's eye. And that when you travel with a crew, you lose that flexibility. And at the same time, that spontaneity, like spontaneity. I don't know how you say that.
Spontaneity, you had it,
Yeah, in a way, I've been dreaming to find a way to being able to just go like lightly, as if I was like without a crew, basically just waking up in the morning, looking up this peak that makes you dream, and just go for it, and not necessarily have to wait for the perfect snow, the perfect having the heli organized, the budgets, the things like this, which slow you down and all the time. And we have invented this autonomous drone that can, you know, like film you by itself, like it just follows you down. And that was kind of like the perfect opportunity for me to kind of try a new way of working and kind of make that whole experience of filming a lot nicer to me. But So basically this season I've been traveling around with my wife in a camper van, and we've just been like using that drone and shooting ourselves, like self-shooting. And it's been amazing. It's been so cool. Just go and visiting some friends, they bring you and do some crazy stuff, and then suddenly you just go and write stuff that you want, that you would never have brought a big crew with you to shoot, because it was maybe not worth it, maybe too risky, maybe not interesting with a story or with a whole concept. And then you end up doing really cool stuff in those places because it doesn't cost you anything, you're just doing it because you love it, and you end up having the drone above you, so then it captures it, so it's really, really cool.
Was this past season the first year for the DIY films?
So basically this season was the first year, and it was a bit of a test season, and to be honest at the beginning it was a bit of a shit show with all the snow conditions and trying to get used to work with the drones. There was still some technical problems here and there, so we made a few stupid mistakes where we basically screwed days after day. You know, you would crash the drone at the top of the mountain, and then the next day you forget a blade, and then the day after there was an SD card error in the camera. You know, there was always stuff like this happening at the beginning, and then on top of that you got the pressure to releasing something, so it was a bit like nerve-breaking, but it was like we learned so much, and it's so cool because we went through that whole process of, you know, working things out so that we can be independent, and I'm really, really glad we did that work, because now I have the feeling that we can go, you know, it's become worth it to go across the world and do some crazy trips with that freedom and kind of live the dream, I would say, for real, rather than than with your crew.
So do you already have pretty specific ideas for this coming winter?
Yes, it's shaping up at the moment. Yeah, we've got some things in I've got a few things in down my sleeve. But yeah, I know we want to go a bit to Japan, Alaska, but there are some variations to that, and then I've got some of the stuff that I'll keep for myself for now.
Don't spill all the beans. Hey, I want to ask you about your board, the XV. Has your taste in snowboards changed over the years? Do you now prefer a stiffer board or a less stiff board than you used to, or has it all been pretty consistent?
Well, technology has evolved, so I think my tastes have evolved with it. So I used to ride, boards used to be, a bit more traditional in some ways. And I think more, when they're, like, before there used to be no rocker, those huge rocker and camber thing, that, like, there was nothing like this before.
Yeah.
And I think that has been a big change, but for that board, I've been able to make the perfect compromise of, being able to ride on my board, being on both my feet, being able to press on my front foot in powder as if I would be riding on a groomer, and to being able to really push through my turns, like on the front foot, like you do in surfing, and that's what I've been able to achieve lately and with my new board, and I'm really, really, really happy about it. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. I kind of, like a lot of, I think that before powder boards have always been kind of either like super fishy or swallowtail or something like this, or it used to be kind of something where you needed to be on your back foot, like, yep, completely, like, and I've always hated that. I always kind of prefer something where you could be balanced. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Cool. I think one of our reviewers in Alaska currently has the XV split board, and we'll see what he has to say about it, and I'll make sure he knows how he's supposed to be riding the thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, get off the back foot.
Good. Yeah, exactly. Don't be scared. Push on your front foot.
Yeah, I don't think this particular reviewer is gonna have any I don't think that's gonna be something he's gonna need to be told.
Okay.
We'll let him know anyway though. I admitted earlier that of the films of yours I've seen, White Noise is kind of my personal favorite. I was curious if there's someone out there who isn't as familiar with you and your riding, do you have a particular film or video edit that, you think if someone wants to see what I do, this is kind of my, I would point them toward this. Do you have a favorite in that regard?
Unfortunately, not really. I think all the different films have different aspects, and to be honest, it's kind of hard. Like, I really liked I think the This Is My Winter was really my first film, and I think it's quite dear to me because it's got a lot of, like, it's got drama. I get a really big close call at the beginning, and then you see me in that whole young and crazy mode. And then, I really love the Antarctica movie, Mission Antarctica we did, 3 years ago. But, those last three films we have done are available only on YouTube and Vimeo. So, unfortunately, it's a bit harder to find them, to view them. But I don't know, just watch them all.
Yeah, watch them all.
I'm sorry, I don't have a piece. Like, maybe I should work on a bit of a recap from everything I've done. It would be nice to make an edit someday.
That would be cool. That'd be really cool. And especially given that you've already said, too, that you're super enthusiastic with the current films what that allows you to do and frees you up to do. So, yeah, you kind of started with, This Is My Winter, and looking at the early days, I've thrown cast my vote for White Noise to see, and I do think the DIY project, I mean, you watch any of these edits and it's pretty clear. I mean, what you've talked about here, I think comes across very well in those films, that kind of freedom, the way you are freed up to be in the mountains the way you want to be in the mountains, right? And not necessarily bogged down in production. So, yeah, I guess you're right. People have to just go watch them all. One more question. If people want to keep up with your adventures these days, where are the best places for them to follow you?
So I would say that like Instagram is where I'm mostly active, and my Instagram is Xavier Delarue, my whole name altogether. And then we're starting to put up a website with a blog, which is going to be called xvdiy.com, and it's going to come for the beginning of the fall. And there we're going to like do a bit of a recap from the whole DIY thing, and we're going to keep it updated throughout the whole season. And now that we've got things going, we're going to be a bit more sharing on that platform.
Cool. Yeah. Very cool. Well, we'll wrap this up and I'll let you get back to your family. Xavier, I've really appreciated the conversation, and it's going to be fun to keep tabs on you for this coming season, see where you end up. And if we get lucky, hopefully we'll end up in the same spot along the way and grab a drink.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Thanks for your interest and for trying to keep up with a good culture of snowboarding and letting me bring some messages on the table. Thanks.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Xavier, you take care. That's it for this edition of the Blister Podcast. Thanks to Xavier for the conversation, to our strikingly handsome audio engineer, Justin Bob, who is going to soon become the coolest dad around. And thanks to Nest Bedding for sponsoring this episode. Be sure to go to nestbedding.com to start getting a great night of sleep and to start enjoying every single day more. Till next time, head over to blisterreview.com to see what we're up to there. Subscribe to the Blister Podcast on iTunes, and we will catch you next week.